Welcome to At the Table. I'm Clark Wolf, and this is the weekly radio show about all things food, brought to you from Sonoma County. Not just wine country, but farm country, and boy, we have some good restaurants. And it's all Charlie's fault. No, not entirely, but Charlie Palmer is my guest today, and he's been doing wonderful things with food in a lot of places for a long time, but has made this his home. And so long overdue to sit down and say howdy and kind of catch up with what's going on with the Charlie Palmer Collective. Welcome, Charlie.
Hey, nice to be here.
It's good to have you here. I mean, I first went to your restaurant, one of the most beautiful restaurants in the history, of restaurants in the 20th and 21st century. Oriole on 61st Street was a truly, truly beautiful place. What was it like opening up a restaurant in 1988?
Well, you know, as people may or may not remember, Oriole on 61st Street in the townhouse was coming out of the worst financial
the 87
period.
Crash.
Yeah, the crash. Yeah, Black Monday, everybody remembers that, or, you know, doesn't want to remember that probably. So friends of mine would say, like, hey, really smart, Charlie, opening a high-end restaurant in the worst economy in 25 years or whatever it was. But, hey, you know, it was my answer was, hey, I'm building this restaurant with my own hands. You know, I had the crazy idea that I was going to be my own general contractor. And we bought a building on 61st Street with a partner and completely gutted it and turned it into a restaurant. It wasn't a restaurant before that. And but, you know, lo and behold, everything worked out fine. And opening Oriole, I think, in some ways was a bit of a revolutionary step because it was really at a point where all the best restaurants in New York City were considered the best, were all French restaurants.
Yeah.
I would say maybe Italian was in there too, but
those were favorite restaurants.
Yes.
But the best restaurants, I agree with you completely, yes, were French.
Yeah, were French restaurants. You had, you know, La Côte Basque and La Cine and La Grenouille and
Lutèce.
La Chantilly. And
right.
Lutèce, of course, was considered the best restaurant maybe in the country at that point.
And Le Cirque.
Yeah, and Le Cirque, exactly, which is three blocks away or two blocks away.
Was actually the hottest thing a benchmark, which we'll talk about. And it was also a graceful restaurant. And all of your restaurants have that, but this in particular just had a grace to it. I think that's the word, because, you know, sometimes people call restaurants either feminine or masculine, but I disagree in that case. What it was solid but graceful.
Yeah. Yeah, I really wanted it to feel, you know, luxurious, but really comfortable and not pretentious. And I think that's, you know, we were able to do that because of the space was tiny and not the greatest physical layout for a restaurant, honestly.
Right.
I mean, we literally did not have a bar. It was four seats at the bar in the entryway.
Right, right.
But you know, again, it became a great place. People loved going there. It became one of those places that was very hard to get into. And it's one thing I didn't like about the fact that, you know, people felt like they couldn't come there because they couldn't get a reservation, kind of thing. And, you know, sometimes to a fault, we would be, you know, overbooking and, you know, saying yes to things, and, you know, that causes problems. But at the same time, I think if you show people, you know, hospitality and you really care about them, that, you know, they're willing to wait a few minutes.
And that's what made you American too, because a lot of those French restaurants, if you couldn't get in, you couldn't get in.
Right.
That was it. If you didn't know somebody or know them. And I like that you mentioned the post-crash kind of thing, because I was there. I moved there in 82. 87 was my first economic cycle shock.
Yes, yeah.
And it was an emergence and a discovery period for everybody, right? I mean, it was just like, what are we going to do? I mean, and so, and I have to say, I don't usually have an encyclopedic memory of dishes. I have a vivid memory of some kind of a beautiful crab salad that is in my head and in my mouth that you served on something. And again, it was a period of time when I was going next door to 667 Madison to Lowe's Hotels, where I was their consultant for 12 years. But I would pass that. And the reason I'm bringing all this stuff up is because I think it informs how we feel about your restaurants now. It makes me smile every time I think about Oriole.
Yeah, and I think people felt that, you know, and I think, you know, that's why a restaurant can exist for 30 plus years.
Yeah.
I think, and thrive. I mean, I think that's really a testament to like constantly being innovative too, and moving on, not ever resting on your laurels and saying like, oh, you know, it's great. Let's don't touch it. It's just, you know,
but you've never been, yeah, but no one would ever accuse you of being painfully innovative. You're not one of those people that's trying to do a magic show every 30 seconds.
No.
Which we greatly appreciate, Chef. Let me tell you. I just, you know, I mean, it's like, it delight me, but don't shock me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's been kind of a hallmark of all of our chefs and restaurants. You know, we had these simple conversations like, look, we don't do stupid food. You know, if it's
not that about sums it up.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, you're right.
It's as simple as that.
Don't do stupid food, folks.
And I would say if you not feel comfortable serving it to me or to your mom or to somebody that you really respect, you know, taste wise, then just don't do it. I mean, because there's so many things you can do. You know, with so many ingredients that really do make sense and are delicious. It has to be delicious.
And are delicious. If you just joined us, I'm talking to Chef Charlie Palmer, and he's got a collective. That's what he calls it. And I like that you call it a collective, you know, because having worked with a lot of different restaurateurs and chefs who had restaurants, they begin to sometimes call them a chain, which yours are absolutely not. They are a collection. And so to call it a collective not only suggests that it's a collection of individual but related businesses, but also that you work with many other people. You've, I don't want to say fathered, but in this case actually fathered, some wonderful and successful chefs.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, why, you know, years and years ago we kind of refer to it as the collective, because it's not just restaurants either. It's you know, it's rooftop bars, and it's, you know, relationships with wineries, for instance. They're all part of the collective. And, you know, and it really evolves around kind of this broad kind of take on how we feel about food and food in this relationship with wine, for instance, here in wine country, but also the relationship with everything that goes on with suppliers and the people that provide and grow as we do, you know, the ingredients.
It is really interesting because, I mean, there's such a thing as called a benefits corporation, which you're not. That's a very different animal. But by the same token, here you are in hospitality behaving that way kind of philosophically, that you are paying attention to all the people who have a connection to what you're doing.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're doing a lot. So, let's talk a little bit about, I mean, we're cheering that you have taken a hand in the Healdsburg Bar and Grill, someplace we've all loved for a long time and for a little while just felt like it needed some love. Talk a little bit about taking on that kind of a project.
Yeah, well, I mean, it really, and as most things these days with myself and Chris Hunsberger, my partner in Appalachian, founder of Appalachian, you know, it's all about relationships. And that literally came about when Danya Nicastro, who's owned the lease for Healdsburg Bar and Grill for 20 years, came to me, you know, a year and a half ago, I guess it was. And she's a very good friend of my wife, Lisa, and our kids went to school together. She was like, I really want to continue this lease. And the partners that she had at the time were not interested in doing it anymore. And, you know, kind of felt like it wasn't for them, and I get that. But you know, I looked at the thing, and at first bluff, I said, you know, we used to all go there.
Yeah, like we all went there.
And when you look at the situation, I said, well, you know, yeah, I'll help you, but you know, help you, you know, fix things and bring them up to speed, and you know, make those changes. But the more I dug into it, you know, you think about a place like Healdsburg Bar and Grill is really kind of that centric kind of gathering place for people in Healdsburg. And I'm talking about families. You know, I talk about families and, you know, kids coming from school and that, you know, that kind of thing.
And also families when people are visiting, because we live here and people visit us all the time.
Yes.
And they don't always want this big special occasion restaurant, which you have as well.
Right.
They just want to, where do you go? Where can we go that you like to go? Yeah. Right. And that's what Healdsburg Bar and Grill always was.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, you know, nothing simple, but I mean, really, it was about finding the two personalities that will operate it. And you know, when I found Steve Akire, that Steve, is a born in Petaluma, is a Sonoma County guy, there wanted to come back here with his wife Holly to be back home, have some kids,
right?
Which
have a life,
yeah, have a life, and his whole family is in Petaluma, and you know, food is their background too, and he's a perfect guy to head, you know, head the thing up.
That's so funny that you said that, because my first big project in New York City was Arizona 206, and what I was looking for in New York City was somebody from New York who had come to California to get some taste in their mouth, particularly in those days. Yes. 1985, if you could get a chef, yes, it was great if they went to France, but if you could get a chef who had worked and lived in California and was tasting that stuff in those days, and he came back in a Bronx boy with a very strong ability, but he had been in restaurants that were too big for him, and here was a little restaurant, and making that marriage. All right, well, listen, in our next segment, when we come back, we're going to be talking to Chef Charlie Palmer about his new project in Petaluma. We're very excited about it. It seems like it's all going to come together in a way that everybody's going to be able to really embrace. We're going to talk, of course, about the new Appellation in Healdsburg and the restaurant there that's being cooked at by somebody you know pretty well. We'll be right back here with Charlie Palmer at the table. Table. I'm Clark Wolf, and I'm here with Chef Charlie Palmer, and he's doing a lot of things. You've been doing a lot of things for a long time. I never will ever forget. I was working with Mandalay Bay, and we were gathering restaurants from all over the place, and I get a call from Mike Sloan, the lawyer, who says, Bill Richardson wants to bring Charlie Palmer. He loves his food. And it was one of those things where Bill was a really great guy who loved foie gras and he loved a burger. And that's my kind of guy. You know what I mean? And he said, I want to bring Charlie Palmer, and he wants to do this thing. And we've spent $400,000 on design. And his architect wants to throw that away and has designed or has conceived a 40-foot or 60-foot wine tower. And we want to know if you think we should do that. And we're going to remember what you tell us in a year. So I took a deep breath and I said, wow, does the light at the top come from outside, or is it soft inside lighting and it's not going to ruin the wine? Is there storage on the ground so that if the hydraulics for the angels don't work, that you could still sell a glass of wine? Your numbers are not going to be classical necessarily, but you're going to get all kinds of attention worth way more than you're spending. And he's going to do a great job. And a year later, boy, full page ads by Hewlett Packard and international newspapers. And also, you had a little restaurant at the very end. It was all the things a person would want to do in a restaurant all in one place.
Yeah.
What was that like going to Vegas? We never really talked about it. We've referred to it, but we never really talked about what that felt like. Because, I mean, you come from a town of 300, 400 people.
Yeah.
And you went to the big city, town. Right? Very small town. And then now you're in Vegas with a $2 million wine tower.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, in the beginning there, I mean, it really, again, it's about a relationship. When I met Bill Richardson, and, you know, he literally said, like, look, if you would take the time, I'm going to fly you out there. We're going to look at this thing. And if it's not interesting to you, I'll put you right back on a plane and get you right back to New York, you know, because at the time, it had two boys, and we were about to have twins.
Wow.
I wasn't spending a lot of time away from New York City at that time. But, you know, and I see the ideas and the possibilities, really. And then looking at everything, because it really was early on in Las Vegas. Wolfgang was there and Emeril was there. There was some things going on, but it really was kind of at the beginning. You know, Bellagio had just, you know, put their, you know, collection of restaurants together and what was going on. So it was super exciting. And, you know, and when you look at things like that and like anything is possible, it's pretty attractive to a chef and for someone to say, like, you know, you can really literally do anything you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? It was fantastic. And working with Mandalay Bay, working with Bill and his whole team was just incredible. An incredible learning experience.
Yeah.
To really understand and see how things can happen as quickly as they do. Vegas is like no other place in the world as far as like you know, they can build a, you know, a 2,000 room tower, you know, in 18 months.
Yeah. It was a great learning experience for me as well, of course. And the idea that they could build, they brought in all the palm trees, put them across the street, yeah, in the desert, let them rest, because palm trees have to rest, yeah, for a while, and then move them over across the street so that when they opened Mandalay Bay, they were all open and full, yeah, and alive and healthy. And your restaurant, this is what we did. Your restaurant was like all the other restaurants there. They were independent buildings. Yes. They were real restaurant buildings that were up against a main restaurant, and we all tried to have you each have at least two other businesses in town, which you did, yes, very smartly, yeah, so that you could afford to be there and have general management. People don't understand this stuff. You just doing a one-off is very, very hard to do, and even then you had to do a collection, yeah, and when Four Seasons didn't listen to us and decided to do two restaurants in their space, and we said, okay, fine. And I had this ridiculous idea of not having a steakhouse on the main floor in Vegas. They thought I was crazy. Right, we got press. And then you had the good idea of saying, all right, well, if they don't want to use that fancy spot, I'll turn it into Charlie Palmer Steak.
Right.
And not a bad move on your part.
No, it was great. And it was kind of like a natural thing, because we, you know, like you said, we had the team there, and, you know, I remember Randy Morton was the GM of the Four Seasons there at,
yeah,
the time, and,
yeah,
and a good friend. And, you know, we took a space that was obviously not doing well and turned it overnight into a, you know, a thriving, you know, business. Oh, and
overnight,
business.
Overnight.
Yeah, literally overnight.
Overnight.
Yeah.
And wait, part of it was you had the team. Part of it was,
yeah,
you had the reputation of being able to make really good, really flavorful, solid food, which is what you want in a steakhouse.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the building didn't have a steakhouse, and you were the natural one, and it just is, yeah, one of those things. Well, I mean, I feel like that's kind of the way you've gone about a lot of these things, that, you know, these things just seem to appear to be just right for you.
Yeah.
Is that how that works?
Yeah. I mean, we've never really been searching for anything. The things kind of come to us, yeah, in a lot of ways. And it's like, and then you can decide, you know, if it makes sense for us, it doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, for every restaurant or every project, I should say, that we've done, we've probably, you know, turned down 10, you know,
yeah,
because it just,
yeah,
didn't fit, you know, what we were thinking at the time or what I wanted to do at the time, honestly. I mean, you know, selfishly, it's only...
No, it's got to be right, because this is hard work.
Right.
And then you moved your family here.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about that.
Well, it was really my... Lisa and I decided that when we got married and lived in New York City, lived on the Upper East Side, that in 10 years we were going to move somewhere.
Yeah.
Not for any specific reason. We just said, you know, like, look, you know, 10 years, I want to be somewhere else, you know. We could be anywhere, you know, all over the world. And always with the intention of having a home in New York, because New York is, that's still...
It's, I mean, New York.
It's my life, you know. My life started in New York and will always be in New York, you know. Going to New York tomorrow, so. You know, we looked everywhere. We looked a lot. Obviously, we had a lot of relationships in the wine country in,
yeah,
general at that point. Especially the, you know, Barry and Audrey Sterling were very dear friends of ours. And, you know, for years I've been like, yo, you should come, you know, you should look at living and out here. And then we had four boys. It kind of made a lot of sense, like,
yeah,
being a more rural place and a,
yeah,
place they could grow up. You know, not that New York is not great for kids, because I think kids, you know, in New York, they grow up in New York City, are some of the smartest, most intuitive people.
And also, yeah, resilient.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, tough in the good ways.
Yes.
Strong.
Yeah.
Right? Not just forceful, but strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Joy and Audrey and Barry, my gosh.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite people ever.
Of course,
ever.
Joy and I have been friends for, you know, ever, like 40
ever,
years.
Ever, so, ever, ever. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and that kind of made sense. And narrowing it down to Healdsburg was not that hard, because for whatever reason, we just, you know, whenever we were here, we'd rent a house every summer for a couple of weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And we'd be back in Healdsburg.
Go to Healdsburg.
And we said, well, we should really look in Healdsburg. This is a great town, and, you know, great people. Had met a lot of people then, and obviously knew them. And
and it's one of those places, I just really, there's no place, as much as the Napa Valley is revered, and I do love the Napa Valley, I've been going there since the 70s for sure, there is no place in the Napa Valley that's quite like Healdsburg is in Sonoma County.
Yeah, with that kind of quaint town square.
Warmth, but also sophistication.
Yeah. And then, you know, and you drive 5 minutes in any direction, you're in the country and you're in wine, you know, you're in a winery, you're in the vineyards, you know, that kind of thing.
And you really, I don't want to say pioneered exactly, but did in a very important way, put those relationships very much forward with Hotel Hillsborough, where you really brought all those winemakers and all those relationships right into the property and right into the restaurant in a very public way that was very different than the way people did, because you talked about the people who made the wine and you talked, it was so, I don't know how to explain, I'm going to ask you how to express it when we come back in a minute to talk more about not just your relationship with the wineries and that continuing thing, but also about Appellation and about what that means and about, well, maybe a little bit about who's cooking there and what Folio is all about. And we will get to Petaluma, but, you know, we're still driving around in the north of the county. We'll be right back here with more At the Table. Table. I'm Clark Wolf, and I'm here with Chef Charlie Palmer. We're talking about his wonderful restaurants and hotels and other projects. And we've been to Vegas, and we've been to New York, and we now are outside of Hillsborough on Mill Creek with the family. And talk a little bit about Appellation and the new restaurant there.
Well, you know, as people may or may not know, Appellation Hillsborough is our second Appellation property.
So, right. That's right. That's right. Lodi.
So yeah, Appellation Lodi. It started about 2 years, you know, a little over 2 years ago now. And this is a property that we partnered with Russ and Catherine Munson, and who are a sweet couple and have owned a hotel in Lodi for many, many years, over 35 plus years. And, you know, we just felt that it was time for someone else to take, take this beautiful property and take it to the next level. And it was a great opportunity for us because what is now Appellation Lodi Wine and Roses is really a special property and a very special place that people don't realize, I don't think, what Lodi is really about. When people think about Lodi, they're like, you know, there's a song stuck in Lodi, right? And that's the extent of it. But this is an incredible place in my mind. And you know, I've learned about Lodi over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. And it's an amazing place for agriculture.
People don't understand that there was a time. Well, I mean, you've been here long enough. I've been here long enough. When I first moved to Sonoma County 26 years ago, they would say, "Where's that?
Yeah,
Sonoma County. Where's Hillsburger? What is? And Lodi is very different on its own and much more in the heart of agriculture.
Yeah,
here we're much more by the coast. It's redwoods and all that. The rest, but Lodi has been talked about by people who really care about wine and care about California and finding those special places for a long time.
Yeah,
it's the good gossip.
Yeah, I mean, number one, you know, premium olive oil producing region in California.
Absolutely,
produces more grapes than Napa and Sonoma combined. 89 registered wineries in the Lodi region now.
Wow.
I mean, I'm talking about small craft wineries that are really doing something special.
And that are going to last.
Yes.
That are not the corporate kind of big thing that's having a hard time. Go back. Let's not stop about the olive oil. You're absolutely right about that. And with the way the weather is changing, there's going to be more olives in California.
Yeah. And the other thing that about Lodi that I didn't know either is like it's incredible for tree fruit, you know, all kinds of, cherries, stone fruits, you know, that are really, really spectacular, but I mean incredible amounts of things, you know. It's really an engine, you know, for that type of agriculture. You know?
Yeah, and here our land is becoming more and more precious, and the fact that Solano and Lodi and these other areas nearby can support the love that we have for those things.
Yeah.
So you did the Appellation there, and then you had the opportunity, or you guys decided to do it here.
Yeah, and then, you know, so Appellation Hillsborough was ground-up construction, part of a larger 28 acres total. When we bought the land many, many years ago, and then have kind of divided it up. The hotel itself is 8.5 acre campus. It's 109 rooms, really two restaurants, Folio's on the ground floor, which is when you walk into the entrance, you know, it's very different than any other hotel. You're kind of received into a what we call a reception area, but it's really a kitchen.
Yeah, you just walk into the kitchen
counter. It's a
you
kitchen counter.
You walk up to the kitchen counter and you look beyond the dining room and out up into the hills.
Yes.
Oh my God. I mean, it was like, where am I? I'm everywhere. I always say that there are two things you can do with a restaurant. Either make people feel completely transported, which is what you did in New York City, or make them feel they're really here.
Right.
And the thing about that physical space in your new property is that you kind of feel both.
Yeah, and as Appalachian, you know, the brand itself, Appalachian is, you know, wine Appalachians, but actually the first Appalachians were food Appalachians, right? And when people think about it way, way back. But, you know, really, Appalachian is about place.
Yeah, it's about place.
You know, and every Appalachian property is about specifically where it is. And it's very different whether it's in Lodi or Healdsburg or our next project, which is opening in Morgan Hill. Very different places, but I think, you know, really digging into what's happening there in that very specific and unique environment, all the craftspeople that are producing whatever they're doing, and I'm not talking about just food, but anything that's happening, you know, very specifically in that microclimate kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what really makes it special.
Yeah. We should mention that what you're referring to in terms of Appalachian is things like Parmesan. Right? Things like certain olive oils, things that are guaranteed to be where they're from. Originally, Perrier was only from a particular mountain stream. I mean, and it's the world's way of respecting and protecting what they have and what's good.
Yeah.
And so that's quite an ambition and quite a calling.
Yeah. And, you know, and honoring what's happening there,
yeah.
you know, and I think and really highlighting those craftspeople.
So talk about the restaurant. Talk about the restaurant.
So Folia is really a what I consider the perfect restaurant for wine country. And I, when I say that, it really speaks to, you know, our portfolio of restaurants, mine itself. It's you know, literally Folio, a blank piece of paper, refers to the foliage and everything that's surrounding us. We have mature olive trees. We have 30 culinary beds on the property, literally outside the kitchen door.
And my goodness, they grow all year round.
All year round. We have 28, you know, really mature citrus trees that providing all the citrus for what we're using. That combined with what we call the home ranch, where we have a huge greenhouse situation and literally 12 acres of planted, you know, where I live.
Where is that?
That's up on that's our home ranch in Mill Creek.
Right.
Between the two, our goal is to be completely estate driven in that kitchen and then Dry Creek kitchen also, of any kind of herb, vegetable, tree fruit, anything that we're using in the kitchen.
It is absolutely what you want to do as a chef and as a
hotelier. What's the next step? It's the next step for us. I mean, there's incredible, you know, purveyors, and we'll always be working with local farmers and stuff.
But what's really wonderful about this is, look, your restaurants are very beautiful and very special, and, you know, Michelin Award and all the rest of it. But they've never been this painfully high, so refined that, as you say, you can't bring your aunt from Iowa.
Right.
You can come and enjoy the food, and for you to be able to have those resources in your family that are not just directed at tweezers.
Right.
Honestly.
Right.
Is a gift to everyone. All right. Well, listen, when we come back, I do want you to talk about Reed and about your your excitement about having your kid in the kitchen as a partner in really wonderful ways. I mean, that's kind of a dream. Many people in the restaurant business and farming and other businesses have to be able to pass things along while you're still active enough to really partner and really have a great time together. And we want to hear about that directly from the dad's mouth. We'll be right back here at the table. We are back at the table. I'm Clark Wolf, and I'm here with Chef Charlie Palmer, and we're talking about his various wonderful properties and projects and work, and maybe we can talk about his kids. Folio is manned in the kitchen by your son, Reed.
Yeah, you know, this is really Reed's first restaurant. This is his restaurant, and you know, it's always been my dream to, you know, work with my sons, and you know we have four sons, and of course two of them are in the film business, and,
okay,
you know, it may be collaborate, guidance, whatever you would call it with those
I
two.
I think you should get them to rent the places for location shoots.
Yes.
I mean, come
absolutely,
on.
Absolutely.
Keep it in the family.
Absolutely. There's always the collaborate there.
Yeah.
You know? And they do produce some content for us, you know, for both the restaurant company and the hotel company.
There you go.
But yeah, I mean, it's been great to have, you know, and Reed came from Blue Hill Stone Barn, who was in New York.
Wow.
It was one of his last stops. You know, he was with... You know, with
Dan
the
Barber.
Team there, Dan and his whole team. So, I mean, it's really kind of like...
Let me say a word about that. Yeah, I had the great pleasure of advising on that project with David Rockefeller, and it is a preservation. This was the Rockefellers. Peggy Rockefeller wanted to have good milk for her kids.
Yeah.
So, of course, they had a dairy.
Yeah.
And it's not that far from New York, and they made it into a preservation education center, but with... Blue Hill, which is Dan and David Barber and from New York City, and really, and a cafe and a beautiful restaurant in the old dairy, in the old milking barn. And so many wonderful things there. Yeah. And Dan has been instrumental in his generation in educating so many. It's been among the most important things to happen in food and agriculture in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
And the fact that Reed was there and, as part of that, and not that long ago, so he got a more mature experience because, of course, with anything else like that, that ambitious, the beginning years can be pretty, you know, complex. That's quite a thing. Where did he go to school? I would be surprised that if he didn't go to...
He went to the Culinary Institute, but he also did a joint program with Cornell. So he has two degrees.
Great.
And, you know, the Cornell, the hotel school, obviously. And, great. But he's, you know, he's worked in Paris at the Bristol Hotel with Eric Frachon. He's been in Korea. He's been all over the world, honestly. Copenhagen with... at Amas,
wonderful.
You know, with one of our previous former chefs, but you know he's seen it all, and I think you know it's great to have him come back here. Of course, he grew up in Sonoma County, so he knows.
He knows the food. He knows he knows the farmers. So if you were to describe his cooking, hopefully he'll be listening to this at home at some point. If you were to describe his cooking, again, I don't know how you describe your own cooking, although very American, of course, and accessible, but also very luxurious. How would you describe Reed's?
Well, I think he's carried the mantle in some ways. I've always called what I do, you know, what we do as a group, progressive American cooking, and you know, part of that's because I've never referred to it as American cuisine because I'm not still today sure is there such a thing as an American cuisine,
right?
Are we ready for that yet?
We have many.
Yes,
we have a lot of regional cooking styles,
right?
But an American cuisine is really not the headline.
Yeah, maybe someday, right? Maybe
we'll
someday.
See.
But you know, his I would refer to what you know what Reed's mindset is, it's very immediate what he does. It's like here are the ingredients, and it's completely ingredient driven. He's obsessed with finding the most interesting, greatest, the most delicious things to work with, right?
And there's nothing you can't grow here.
Exactly.
So he's the kind of person who, having grown here, he's not imagining things. We have farmers who were coming from the Midwest.
Yeah.
They grew up wanting to be farmers. Then they discovered there wasn't any left in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And they come here and they're constantly, when I talk at the farmers market, particularly at Hillsburg, they'll say, oh my God, I can't believe we could grow this here. We can grow this, right? He knows all of this.
Yeah.
So he knows what's possible. So would you say that I always ask chefs if they had to be in the kitchen all day in one spot, where would they be? At this point, I'm thinking you're expediting. But I mean, what was always your comfort zone, your spot in the kitchen that just made you the happiest?
Yeah, you know, I was always, you know, and still are, like, I I go in and like I work in a garmage.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Which doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
Right. Or I'll just say, today I just want to cook fish.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to like work with, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And for him, what do you think?
I think he's kind of the same way. It's like every day's different.
Yeah.
Every day's different. But it's like I said, it's ingredient driven. He's obsessed to the point where he dives, you know, for sea urchin up in Fort Bragg. He'll be working with guys and getting, you know, gooey duck clam and stuff like that, or you know, finding things that are of interest to him, but also are delicious.
Absolutely delicious. Yeah. All right. So Folio is open all the time.
Yeah, Folio is open 5 nights a week. You know, for dinner.
Yeah.
Obviously, Appalachian, we do, you know, breakfast and lunch 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And then Monday nights we do, I would call it more of like an a la carte menu.
Right.
You know, a little bit lighter, a little bit more freedom.
A little bit more local, huh?
Always local.
I got to tell you. All right. So I want to remind people, you just said something really wonderful. Yeah. You have a restaurant in a beautiful property in a wonderful region, and you're open 5 nights a week, not 7. And that's because it's also got to be a viable business. It's got to work for the staff. It's got to work for the crew. It's got to work for the cycles of the farmers and the people who produce for you. When we come back, we will just have a few minutes, and I want you to tell us the latest update on Petaluma, because this sounds like a logical next step. And I mean, how many more kids have you got, right? We'll be right back here at the table. Table. I'm Clark Wolf here with Chef Charlie Palmer. It's charliepalmer.com to find out all of it, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Easy peasy. All right. You've done a very local. I mean, all of your places are very welcoming to locals, but you've done a locals night at Dry Creek Kitchen on Thursdays for ages.
Yeah. We call it neighbor night. And, you know, it's a very, very attractive pricing. You know, it's 3 courses or, you know, $53, I think it is.
Wow. You can't get a burger and a Coke.
No.
I mean, really.
These days. Yeah, I know.
I'd be a little facetious. And so at Appalachian, what night is it?
On popular demand, Folia on Wednesday nights. So 2 different nights. Wednesday nights, we do the same neighbor night menu.
So
we call it neighbor night north.
North, there you go.
That's a very
New York City thing that I learned a long time ago. First of all, you want to be able to have a collection of restaurants. In New York, you want them walking distance.
Yeah.
And here, you want them quick driving distance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you want them to be similar in spirit, but different in experience enough so that a local and a regular can come a couple of nights a week if they want to.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so you're now reaching out to a whole bunch of new locals that are a little bit, connected to your pal at Hillsburg Bar and Grill.
Sure, sure.
It was approved. Everybody's excited about your new property in Petaluma.
Yeah, so the next project in the pipeline, because I think Morgan Hill will be the next Appalachian hotel open, probably by the end of this year. But, you know, Petaluma, you know, we've been through, you know, quite a bit. And, you know, now we are fully entitled project. And I think, you know, safely to say that, you know, in 18 months to 2 years, it'll take us to build it. It's a beautiful project. It's right on Petaluma Boulevard and B.
Yeah.
Right on that corner.
Yep, yep,
And we'll kind of anchor part of that downtown area, which has been a big thing of mine. I think Petaluma can really, you know, we could really be of big help and be part of the community in that downtown area.
And I got to tell you, I agree with you totally. And having spent some time in Petaluma, and please, Petaluma, take this the right way. Yeah. There's always been good food in Petaluma.
Absolutely.
However, I have never thought of it as a place to go for dinner.
Yeah.
It, even though there is dinner there, it's just it's just not that mentality. And a good hotel like the one you're going to do, will just give that added kind of, there's going to be an anchor and a place, and it's hyper-local, but not exclusively local. Sometimes people from other places go to a beloved smaller town and they think, am I welcome here? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I love Petaluma. Well, listen, what is that going to be called?
It'll be Appalachian Petaluma.
I love when that happens. All right. Well, listen, thank you for all you do. Good luck with all the new projects. You know that we know that you'll be making good food and growing good things. We don't know what this year is going to be like in produce. It's certainly been an interesting winter. And the fact that we're sitting here standing upright after the 87 crash all these years later means we can do anything, right?
We've been through it all.
We have been through it all. Yeah. Thanks so much, Chef.
Yeah, thank you.
We will be here next time at the table.